Interfaith Talk Radio, being brought to you by Dr. Pat Worldwide on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. And as always, we are streaming on the internet. You can find us at interfaithtalkradio.com. We are sharing an expanding dialogue on interfaith understanding and the quest for a shared spiritual reality, a shared spiritual awakening. We are a rabbi, a Muslim minister, and a Christian pastor. I am Rabbi Ted Falcon from Beit Aleph Meditative Synagogue.
I'm Brother Jamal Rahman from Interfaith Community Church in Seattle.
And I'm Pastor Don McKenzie from University Congregational United Church of Christ in Seattle.
And for those of you who are interested, you can call Pastor Don's church and listen to the secretaries, too, as they try to pronounce all those names each time they pick up the telephone.
Right, yeah.
It's really an impressive thing. We are about to enter the Holy Week for Jewish tradition, for Christian tradition, and we've just passed the birthday of Muhammad.
That's right, yes.
In Islamic tradition. So there's a kind of convergence that's happening at this time of the year between our three faiths. It's interesting to look at our calendars because next year, Passover and Easter week are not going to fall at the same time because, every 3 or 4 years, the Jewish solar year adjusts, the Jewish lunar year adjusts to the solar year by adding an extra month for leap year, and that pushes the Jewish holidays way later for that 1 year, and they get 10.5 days earlier each year until another leap year comes. So usually Passover and Easter week coincide, but during leap year in Jewish calendar, they do not. And this fall will be the last time in 30-some years that the Jewish month of Tishrei, which is the New Year's, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and the holy month in the Muslim calendar, Ramadan, come together.
Right. And also the celebration in the Christian tradition of St. Francis of Assisi.
Mm-hmm. Which is a different kind, not a seasonal thing, but a very important moment in the history of the church. Yeah.
Right. So we celebrate those moments, especially when such convergences exist. And I suppose everybody who's been listening to us and everybody who's been kind of watching us as we've been gallivanting around the city and the country and even the world gets that we, too, are expressing a convergence. A convergence of like-minded people from very different traditions and from very different backgrounds. So we are going to be continuing to look at the energies of Easter week, the energies of Passover week. The Seder actually begins tonight. So the fast from leavening begins this evening. And the energies of the birthday of Muhammad, as well as the energies within the Muslim tradition having to do with liberation from enslavements. Mm. And we're going to be looking at that together during our time today. I would like to remind our listeners that you can become part of this dialogue by joining us at 425-373-5527. 425-373-5527. And there is a toll-free number in Western Washington. Now, I assume everybody's in Western Washington, but that must mean if you're not in Seattle, you could call 888-298-KKNW, otherwise known as 888-298-5569. So we just realized, Brother Jamal, that March 30th, was the date this year that Muhammad's birthday was celebrated.
That's right, yes. And for Muslims, it's a very a profound time. They take the time to pray, sometimes pray all night long, and they certainly participate in a lot of almsgiving, being of service. And I think you were talking about this theme, both of you were talking about the theme last time, and you mentioned it this time, the theme of liberation from enslavement.
Mm-hmm.
In Prophet Muhammad's case or situation, in the Islamic tradition, Prophet Muhammad experienced many mystical epiphanies, but two in particular stand out, which every Muslim knows about. One is the night of power. That's when the first verses of the Quran descended upon Prophet Muhammad. And the second one is the night journey, when Prophet Muhammad, he went first on a horizontal journey from Mecca to Jerusalem and then ascended seven levels of heaven. And in both of these very profound mystical experiences, there are many, many symbolisms and many insights, many teachings, which I'd love to get into as we go along.
But you're not going to tell us now.
Well, I want to give both of you a chance also.
No,
I'm delighted to tell you, yes. For example, I'll give an example. In the night of power, and of course, both of you know it very well, but that's that particular night when Prophet Muhammad, as he did many, many times in his life, he would meditate in silence, sometimes for 40 days and nights at a time in the caves in Mecca. In fact, he started meditating when he was in his early teenage years, 10 years old, 11 years old. But this particular time, he saw this, or had this extraordinary phenomenal experience where a light approached him. And the light said, "I am Angel Gabriel." And he was very, very frightened. And to cut a long story short, the light said on several times, "Iqra," which means recite, recite. And of course, his first response was, I'm illiterate, I can't even read and write. But eventually, he felt this extraordinary pain within him. And from the depths of his being, startling words of exquisite beauty poured out of him. And this happened intermittently for 23 years. And that has become the Quran. So the teaching here is that we all have that ability within ourselves, deep within us. This kind of reservoir of wisdom from the depths of our soul. And this is far beyond the most subtle of intellectual reasoning. Deep within each one of us lies what is called this tablet of knowing. The mystics call it a spring overflowing its spring box. The question is, how do you access that? Because we're all so, as a mystic say, addicted to subtle intellectual discussions. And if you remember that wonderful metaphor that the mystics say, we're like that bird when we engage in this intellectual discussion. We're like the bird which ties a snare and knot around its legs and then unties it and makes a snare more complex, the knots more complex, unties it again and again, forgetting the point is to escape. And that's when you get in touch with your inner knowing.
As you're speaking, I'm struck by the fact that two of the experiences that are so essential to the experience of Islam are mystical experiences. And yet, and I think this is true probably in Judaism and Christianity too, the average Christian, the average Muslim, the average Jew would not say he or she is a mystic. Am I right? I mean, I would say, you know, here is clear, the Prophet was a mystic. I would say from my experience as a Christian, Jesus was a mystic. And certainly Moses had mystical experiences and so forth. Why is that? I mean, why is it that there's a defining moment in each of these traditions that are referred to by anybody who is paying attention as mystical, and yet those of us on the street...
Muslims would say that Muhammad, like other prophets, was a very complete human being, embracing both heaven and earth. So he was rooted in the earth, yet his heart was open to the mystical skies, and he embraced both. That made him an authentic mystic.
But and do most Muslims refer to Muhammad as mystic?
Oh, they know that a large part of him was deeply, profoundly mystical. Absolutely. In fact, his teachings in Islam, one is for the general population. There's another body of teaching which he shared with his companions. which is secret. One of his companions said, for example, it's documented, if you heard what he said, and if I revealed to you what he said, you would actually cut my throat. It is that startling, that what would be considered blasphemous.
Or radical.
Yes, radical.
That's when he whispered to him that the Jews are right.
Well, the Jews, he said the Jews are real are Muslims, all surrender to God. Like Abraham in the Quran is Muslim.
What would he have said? I mean, if you take that story literally, what would have sounded treasonous would have been...
Like, for example, Prophet Muhammad said, I am God, and God is I, except that I am I, and God is God.
Right.
But had he stopped at the first half, it would be considered extraordinarily blasphemous. But he continued.
Jamal, I have another question, which is not quite on the track of how we got started on this, but the angel Gabriel.
Yes.
A figure from Jewish tradition. What was the role? I mean, when the prophet announced that his revelation had come via the angel Gabriel, was this a figure known to the population, or was this new too?
No, go ahead. I was just going to say, I think we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back to hear about the angel Gabriel and that transmission and how Gabriel was viewed by the population at that time. So thanks for listening, folks, and we are continuing after these words from our sponsors. They allow us to be here with you, so give them a listen. We'll be right back.
Church of Christ wants you to know about the God is Still Speaking campaign, a national effort to let everyone know that this denomination welcomes everyone, no matter what, to the worship of God and the service of the church. We believe that God has much, much more to tell us about the good news of the gospel of Jesus and about what love can do to help us with this beautiful but troubled world. To find out more, log on to www.ucc.org/index.php. We wish you blessings for your life.
Would you like one of the most rewarding sales jobs of your life? The Dr. Pat Show has rapidly grown into the number one radio show to thrive by. The Dr. Pat Show is hailed for its remarkable guests, sponsors with integrity, and amazing listeners. Dr. Pat is in search of a creative, self-starting, energetic person to join the marketing team. If you're interested in helping promote and sustain the Dr. Pat Show, please submit your resume to pat@thedrpatshow.com. Again, that's pat@thedrpatshow.com. This is your opportunity to make a difference in your community and the world. Do you know why there's so much publicity about stem cells? Well, they are the building blocks of our health, the foundation for your everyday healthy renewal. Would you like to harness the power of your own stem cells and increase their production by up to 70%? There is now available a revolutionary science to help your body's natural renewal system. The producers are so confident that you'll feel the difference for yourself, they're offering a week's supply for only $9.95. Just visit AdultStemCellNutrition.com. That's AdultStemCellNutrition.com.
No shirt, no shoes, no problem. Come as you are. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Well, shoes is okay, but we'd prefer shirts. So welcome back. This is Interfaith Talk Radio. We are a rabbi, a Muslim minister, and a Christian pastor, and we are with you every Monday afternoon from 5 to 6. However, we will actually be here counting today only three more Mondays from 5 to 6, and then at the end of April, we're switching to Wednesdays at 2 p.m. So our last Monday with you is the 16th of April, and our first Wednesday at 2 p.m. will be the 25th of April.
So the show continues, just a different
time. The show continues. We're getting earlier. We'll be more awake. People wonder, do I always talk as slowly as I talk on the radio? I say only after 5. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, why, I'm just a whiz. I mean, you can hardly shut me up. So we are talking about Gabriel, the angel Gabriel, and I just... Before you continue, Pastor Don and Brother Jamal, in your question and response, I do think you ought to know that in, you know, most Jewish kids are given Hebrew names. So I have a Hebrew name. And my Hebrew name is Gavriel. And Gavriel is Hebrew for Gabriel. That's the angel in Hebrew is called Gavriel. So anything that Brother Jamal can't answer for you as Gabriel's namesake, I do have certain information that I can share.
Coming to the right person. This is great. Well, we were just saying during the break that Gabriel is not only important in Jewish tradition, but Gabriel was the one who announced to Mary that she was pregnant with Jesus. And Mary was presumably Jewish, so that continues that. But my question to Brother Jamal was, what was known about the angel Gabriel in the time of the prophet, so that if the prophet said, my revelation has come from the angel Gabriel, is this news to the population? I mean, there were Jews and Christians in Mecca, or was this part of a new thing?
Well, of course, in Islam, there is that profound belief in angels. In the articles of faith, you believe firstly in God, and the second one is belief in angels. And it was known in Arabia at that time because of the existence of Jews and Christians about Angel Gabriel. And he's very strongly emphasized in the Quran. So he is the, shall I say, messenger of God in the angelic kingdom. And his main work is to bring these messages from God, the revelations. So in the Quran also, the message given to Mary, who in the Quran is the holiest of the holy, was through Angel Gabriel, the Quran says. Hmm. The message to Prophet Muhammad to recite was through Angel Gabriel. And then subsequently, all the revelations of the Quran for 23 years came from God, but through the intermediary of Angel Gabriel to Prophet Muhammad.
Wow.
So he played a major role.
But so now, the prophet was neither Christian nor Jewish, but somehow the Angel Gabriel for the prophet had authority, as well as for the people who heard about this. And to me, that's fascinating. I mean, there's another thing that connects us, and Ted being the incarnation of the angel Gabriel,
that's right,
connects us. So
I don't usually reveal that.
You shouldn't have said that on the air. Yeah.
Anybody who's listening, forget that I said that. I mean,
disregard that.
You know, Gavriel in Jewish tradition sits at the left side of God. On the right side is Michael, the angel Michael. Mm-hmm. Michael is Michael. It means the one who is like God. Gavriel is Gever-el, like the might of God or the strength of God. And then in the imagery, Uriel, like the vision of God, is in front. And Raphael, which is the healer of God, God's healer, stands behind the throne.
And all those ELs are in reference in Hebrew to God.
Yeah, right? El.
Yeah.
Gavriel, Michael. Yeah, El is one of the names of God in Hebrew.
So the whole cosmology in Islam of angels, and they're constantly interceding on behalf of humanity, pleading to God for this person and that person.
So do people, do Muslims pray to angels to intercede?
Well, actually, at the end of each prayer, a Muslim will turn his or her head to the right and say, Assalamu alaikum, and then to the left also. And a large part of it is to say, peace and greetings upon the angels who have congregated on my right side and left side. And then in the night journey, when Prophet Muhammad ascended 7 levels of heaven, he saw angels praying. And the metaphor of the Kaaba and the pilgrimage of going around the Kaaba is that vision Prophet Muhammad had of angels circumnambulating the throne of God.
Right. And is there a number of...
Yeah, 7 times they go around.
You know, which in Jewish tradition, like traditionally before a wedding, the bride walks around the groom 7 times.
Uh-huh.
You know, this circumambulation of 7. Sometimes in more modern tradition, both the bride will walk around the groom 7 times, the groom will walk around the bride 7 times, signifying like a focus on that person, a protection of that person, like kind of being in orbit of that person.
It's fascinating, this science of numbers.
So I got us off the track a little while ago, but I'm feeling a connection between the whole idea of messenger and revelation, or making things known, and the particular time of year that we're in, spring, Passover, Easter, the birthday of the prophet. It's not an accident that at least there are sometimes, some years, some solar years, when these things actually coincide. Someone once said to me, why isn't Easter just like the first Sunday of April every year? And I said, well, it's the first Sunday after the first full moon after the vernal equinox, which is roughly March 21st. And the person said, well, that's not a theological thing. And I said, no, it's not that's not theological, but it does connect to the fact that Passover needs right. to connect to a time when there would have been enough light by the full moon to get out of Egypt, in other words, to escape.
Yeah, it's the closest, in a way, you get to how it'll fall on the Jewish calendar without having the date specifically figured from the Jewish calendar.
And I think it's interesting to think of the whole question of needing light to move forward and revelation. You know, I mean, these great moments when you suddenly realize something you hadn't seen before and it lifts you, you know. And I think of this season of the year as of that time. I mean, the birthday of the prophet brings to mind these revelations, of course, which must have been an incredible thing for a human being who, as you say, was illiterate, but was receiving very important messages via the angel Gabriel, and the whole need to escape a place of imprisonment, and then in Judaism, and then in Christianity, the movement from Palm Sunday, which is a day of actually an odd coming together of the forces of empire and the forces, so to speak, of the reign of God in Jerusalem, and then needing to pass through in Holy Week, in Christian Holy Week, the darkness or relative darkness of Maundy Thursday and the day of crucifixion. And then, in effect, the parting of the Red Sea with the resurrection. The darkest hour is just before dawn, the old country song says, you know. It happens at this time of year when we've been through a season of darkness and rain and difficulty, and we want to get out of that. I mean, you were talking last time about spring cleaning. You know, it's no coincidence. I mean, if you stop to think about it, the house gets dirtier. It's dirtier in the fall because the windows have been open. But the need to get loose, right, to get unstuck, to open the windows, to let things flow, you know, that's this time of year, and it's theological.
It's true. It's, you know, in the Jewish tradition, springtime is when the year begins. Even though Rosh Hashanah, the new year, starts in the fall, the new year starts at the beginning of the seventh month in the Hebrew calendar.
Is that Nisan?
The Hebrew, no, that's Tishri. Oh, okay. Nisan is the first month.
Okay.
Nisan begins tonight.
Okay.
The Jewish day begins in the evening and goes from evening to evening. And our engineer is making all kinds of motions. Are you going?
No, I wasn't making any motions. I was just curious when Toyota begins.
That's Ted's joke.
Sorry. Ted made a step on
the Jewish months. Nissan, Toyota, Buick is actually in the summer.
I see.
No, I like Buick. Anyway, now I forgot altogether.
And the year ends on the Kia, of course.
But the year begins in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no argument about that, even though that's not when we celebrate New Year's. Even in the Torah, in the early books of the Hebrew Bible, Nisan is called the first of the months.
Mm-hmm. And Islam, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, maybe you have experienced this in your congregations, but I find that for some people, elderly people who are ill and so forth, March and April are a time to die because the thought of having the energy to pass through a whole nother year is, I mean, I'm not saying this literally, but it feels as if there's a sense in which one of the times that if you could choose the date of your death, it would make sense to die before before a new year takes you into another cycle of whatever it is, you know. And so I've experienced the death of people at this time of year as particularly deep.
Hmm. In Islam also, this is a time of renewal. It's called the first spring in Islam, Rabi al-Awwal. And people, they really contemplate on the life of the Prophet Muhammad, his actual day-to-day life, and also on his sayings. And the idiom is that when you focus on his sayings, it is as if you're collecting roses in the skirt of your robe. Feeling very enriched and very mm-hmm. perfumed mm-hmm. with all these beautiful roses.
Hmm. So the cycle of Easter and the cycle of Passover particularly are inviting us to kind of enter history, to enter a story that is bigger than us, but somehow it's also our story, and to participate in the rhythms of that story. In Jewish tradition, starting tonight, not only do we share a story, but we share a symbolic meal. You know, it's almost a way of saying, not only are we going to story ourselves into a process, but we are going to eat ourselves into a process. The very foods are going to draw up that cycle. And I'd like to share a little bit about that and look at how we enter into the stories when we return. We'll be back in a few moments. This is Interfaith Talk Radio. We'll be back.
I don't know what's wrong with me. I just can't seem to get over this.
Change results in loss. With death in the family, divorce, or major illness, there's going to be grief. When you're feeling overwhelmed or like you just can't get through it alone, you can heal through grief counseling. You can call Sybil Lundy at Whole Life Counseling.
For nearly 10 years, Whole Life Counseling has been a safe place to come to peace with life changes. Call 206-683-1561 or see my website at wholelifedesigns.com.
Release the negative emotions from your past to bring you your dreams into reality. The Empowering Your Life Seminar transforms the way you think. It helps you remove the blocks that prevent you from doing, having, or changing what you want. Limiting decisions, limiting beliefs, and conflicting values can be eliminated. Call 1-800-800-MIND or go to NLP.com to learn about the May 4th through 6th event in Seattle. Mention the Dr. Pat Show when you call. The Empowerment Partnership. Whatever you think you are, you're more than that.
Contrary to popular belief, having a baby is not always a happy, glowing experience. Many women develop a variety of mood problems, most often depression. Thankfully, there are many options available to heal or prevent this debilitating condition. Dr. Shoshana Bennett is shining a light on postpartum depression right here on the Dr. Pat Show. So tune in and find out how to help someone you love. For more information about postpartum depression, visit us at postpartumdepressionhelp.com.
Independent programs, independent voices, independent ideas. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. This is Interfaith Talk Radio, being brought to you by Dr. Pat Worldwide. We are a rabbi, a Muslim minister, and a Christian pastor engaging in a discussion of issues of interfaith understanding and sharing a spiritual quest. Talking today about the story, the meal, the energies of Passover and of Easter, and how those energies express through all three of our faiths. And I was mentioning the food connection. Typically, eating is an important Jewish activity. Many of the Jewish holidays are home holidays, so they focus around a meal. The Sabbath is a home holiday, you know, so traditionally it's a main meal. You'd have the best meal of the week on Friday night. You could save all week to be able to provide for Friday night. You'll remember when we were in Israel together and we went to my nephew's house, mm-hmm. who is an ultra-Orthodox Jew, and that was the finest meal of their whole week.
Yeah, it was a stunning
and meal. It was very tasty, I must tell you.
Yeah?
And very elaborate.
Passover is a home holiday, and it's real, you know, the home community and then the larger community. So we celebrated individual families and groups of friends tonight. And then tomorrow we have the community Seder, which, like last year, is being held at Pastor Don's church, University Congregational United Church of Christ. God, I'll get that right one of these days. And using food, you know, so the prime symbol of the Passover is a kind of cracker bread called matzah, unleavened bread. The story, of course, is that we left Egypt in such haste that there was no time for the bread to rise. But, like, that's an explanation after the fact. And there actually was a festival of matzah before the Passover. Matzah is a bread of simplicity. It's like just bread, just flour and water cooked before it has time to become anything other than it is, before any fermentation process. So during the whole week, we don't eat any regular grains that have gone through fermentation. So no, unless it's prepared specially for Passover, no wheat, rye, barley, spelt. There's another grain I'm forgetting. There are five grains. At any rate, none of those. And there's a tradition that emerged in Ashkenazic Jewry, Eastern European Jewry, not to eat legumes, like beans or peas, rice, because they mimic chametz, which is leavening. In Sephardic countries, they never developed that tradition. So Sephardic countries during Passover eat, and it's been our tradition in my family to eat during Passover as if we're Sephardic Jews. Because mm-hmm. particularly for those of us who eat very little meat, it really helps to have beans and rice. And if you're preparing for a desert journey, it always seemed to me that those are the foods that you'd take with you. You know, you take the dried beans and stuff that you could carry and cook up.
So Ted, the Passover meal that we'll be celebrating with you on Tuesday night at our church,
yeah,
is an enlargement of what is really a household event.
Right.
Now, so my question to Jamal is, on the topic of food and being at the table, that's a very strong tradition in Islam as well. Is it not?
Yes.
There would be nothing in Islam where people would come together for a huge meal, would there?
Oh, yes. They would certainly have wonderful food. But the focus would be particularly on really providing food for the poor, as it exists in Judaism and Christianity too, I know that. But on these occasions, Ramadan or the two Eids and the birthday of Prophet Muhammad, really giving alms and in the area of food, from your heart, providing sustenance to those who don't have it in the form of food and drink, but particularly food. That's a strong tradition.
Yeah. The tradition of the Sacrament of Communion in the Christian Church is probably an enlargement and a simplification of a household event that would have remembered, in the Christian tradition, would have remembered what we call the Last Supper or Jesus' celebration of the Passover with the disciples.
Which always struck me that the bread that Jesus was holding up, if the story was in fact during Passover week, which is what it says, then he was not holding up a loaf of bread. He was holding up matzah.
Matzah, yeah.
He was holding up unleavened bread. It would be unthinkable for him to have had leavening during Passover time.
So one, I'm suddenly thinking that one of the things that Christians need to be aware of with the sacrament of communion is that this calls us to a table. And, of course, in the Christian church, there is a table present for communion, but it recalls the kind of experience that you all have already described, that in Judaism, Passover is essentially a household event. And there are household events in Islam where there's a small enough group to really have a sense of sharing, and not just the physical dimensions of the meal, but the spiritual dimensions of coming together and being together, being nourished in at all the levels of that meaning.
And also a great time of contemplation, which I suppose is also existent in Passover and Maundy Thursday and Easter. So, for example, on the night of power, the Quran was conceived in the womb of silence. So the tradition is, in silence, you really go deep within yourself and contemplate on your purpose. And in your giving, if you have really contemplated, you'll give, as the Quran says, you give freely of what you love. That's real giving.
It's interesting. The correlate to that in Judaism is called Shavuot, which is actually 50 days after Passover. Mm-hmm. And that commemorates the giving of Torah, so at Sinai, which fits exactly what you've said, a coming out of silence. You know, Moses goes up the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. Moses goes up and engages in deep silence, you know, and then comes down to, at the beginning, elaborate the 10 principles. And then later on, larger segments of the Torah, of the teaching. This whole cycle in Jewish tradition starts a process. You don't get out of enslavement and get to freedom right away. You got to go through the wilderness. And the wilderness is a space where you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
You leave certainty and enter uncertainty if we're to engage in real change. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, there is no opening to possibility.
And that's exactly what Maundy Thursday is about. We enter the wilderness in a night of betrayal and in a night of denial and a night of anguish and so forth, and pass through the moment of the crucifixion. And then the resurrection is a moment of healing. It's a moment of new orientation. It's a moment of recreation, forgiveness, reconciliation. All the things that we would associate with the experience of healing come on for Christian people with the resurrection, but it's the dream of crossing the river. What is the correlate in Islam?
In Islam, if you're talking about the birthday of Prophet Muhammad, a wonderful time to truly, deeply from your heart, focus on two of his sayings, celebrated sayings, and both of you have heard this many, many times. The first one being, know thyself and you shall know thy Lord. That's almost like 50% of our work. And the other 50% is, die before you die. Mm. Die to your false self, to your ego, before you die a physical death. And this is a good time to truly ponder on this and take it to heart.
So there's a real call to awareness that in Islam is paralleled in Judaism and Christianity by the acting out of these experiences, which ultimately do call us to an awareness of things that not only have specifics for these three faiths, but lead us, they're universal. It leads us toward a universal.
Now, always interested me looking at the Christian tradition. I remember as a kid, I'd be accused of being a Christ killer. And when I began to understand a little bit about the Christian story, I would ask those friends, wasn't it necessary that Jesus die? like, it's important that he died because he died in order to free, in order to bring forgiveness. And had he not, it wouldn't have worked. So, like, if that is the case, how can you blame anybody who, I mean, certainly the Jews didn't kill him anyways because the Jews didn't have that kind of political power. But even if you were to think that they were involved, why would that upset you? Why wouldn't you say that that's just part of the whole drama? We needed to have that moment supported.
That's part of the puzzle, I would say, of this experience we're passing through right now. And in particular, the relationship between Jews and Christians, the way the story has played out. Of course, Jesus did have to die to experience the resurrection. And to refer in the Gospels to the Jews is bizarre because it makes it seem as if Jesus and the disciples were something other than that, which they were not. They were Jews. And so to try to make that distinction is false. There are several references to the possibility of a plot to kill Jesus, which is a distraction from these other movements that we're acting out these days or we're remembering, namely the experience of the grace of God or the providence of God within the movement from a place of enslavement to the place of freedom. The fact that Jews might have had anything to do with the death of Jesus is not only a distraction from that theme, but and the consequence of that has been horrible violence, sadness, death, suffering, and so forth, that we need to locate hope to reconcile the three of us. I mean, it's something that exists in particular between Ted's tradition and mine. Mm-hmm. But Jamal, you're an important witness to this and have the potential to make observations that would be helpful.
So we're going to continue that discussion. I feel a little bit like I'm the referee these days, saying, okay, you'll have to hold it for a few moments while we listen to some words of our sponsors, and we will be right back. This is Interfaith Talk Radio.
University Congregational United Church of Christ, located at 4515 16th Avenue Northeast, right across from the Burke Museum, wants you to know that it is a liberal and inclusive congregation waiting to welcome you to worship, education, fellowship, and service. We need your help to say yes to God's purposes. For more information, log on to universityucc.org. That's universityucc.org. Or call 206-524-2322. That's 206-524-2322.
Hello, this is Sue Neufeld Ellis. In our fast-paced, busy world, my new CD, Serenity Through Meditation, is just what you need. Through Stephen Halpern's sonic music entrainment and my voice, we will comfortably guide your brainwaves to that theta state of deep relaxation. To order your free copies of 25 Stress Reduction Tips, go to quantumhealing.us or call 425-455-4207.
Release the negative emotions from your past to bring you your dreams into reality. The Empowering Your Life Seminar transforms the way you think. It helps you remove the blocks that prevent you from doing, having, or changing what you want. Limiting decisions, limiting beliefs, and conflicting values can be eliminated. Call 1-800-800-MIND or go to NLP.com to learn about the May 4th through 6th event in Seattle. Mention the Dr. Pat Show when you call. The Empowerment Partnership. Whatever you think you are, you're more than that.
There's nothing else like it on the dial. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And we are Interfaith Talk Radio. Welcome back to the final segment on our show this Monday afternoon. Passover begins as evening begins tonight. So for Jews in Seattle as well as around the world, this begins either a week or 8 days of avoiding leaven. symbolizing with the way we live that something different is happening, that we're letting go of the puffed upness of how we think things should be or how things have become, and directing ourselves toward a more simple, ideally a more simple existence, remembering what's really important. What's really important is the working title of the book the three of us are doing. Mm-hmm. Or no, that was what really matters.
Yeah, that's for
of course. That's
but what really matters is really important. Mm-hmm. So one way or the other. And we are continuing a deepening dialogue right now about the essential energies of this time. Tonight, one of the symbols that's shared is a bitter herb. And part of the meal is to eat, to taste the bitter herb. I take this one very personally. I'm the one who slices up the horseradish root. So we get little discs of horseradish root. It's like not quite as hot as wasabi, which is a kind of horseradish in Japanese culture, but it's pretty tangy. And the idea is to experience physically, to reawaken in physical senses some of the anguish, some of the pain, some of the sharpness of enslavement. In a lot of ways, it's to call us to consciousness. Because one of the difficulties with our enslavement is that it leads us into unconsciousness. We don't even know what's happening to us. And first we've got to wake up to the pain. If we are to wake up then to the next step in the process, which is to step out of that kind of pain.
So it's also a psychological and essentially a spiritual process of embracing your pain, not running away from it.
Right.
Like we always say, don't run towards pain, just don't run away from it.
Right, and tying together the physical, the emotional, the mental, the spiritual, and understanding that they're all participant in one thing.
You know, in among Islamic teachers, they always say about the same thing, this bitterness, this sadness. A beautiful prayer is, oh God, save me from its harm, but do not deprive me of its good.
Yeah.
So essentially to be present to that and to embrace that.
I'm tasting horseradish as you're speaking, and I'm thinking, yes, that does wake you up. You know, that has
and
a sharp...
And for those of you who can't see this, Pastor Don's eyes are actually watering as he...
that's what's needed, though. I mean, the whole question of how do we become aware of things, and how was it that the Hebrew slaves in Egypt realized finally that they needed to leave, even though it was life-threatening to go. I love the phrase "the puffed upness," because one of my puffed upnesses would be thinking, if I were a slave, that I was only a slave, that Pharaoh's army is the other.
Mm.
But I've realized as we've been working together that we are also Pharaoh's army, because we are the protectors of the status quo. We have
right.
to be.
Right.
And so it's not we, they. And one of our jobs, one of the most difficult challenges I think that we face is the we, they. It's not just among us. I mean, we've found ways to try to understand the ways in which these three traditions come together and don't, the ways in which they provide challenges for each other and also enlighten each other. But the bigger challenge in some ways is, how do we speak to others who have different points of view? Do we say, we're right and you're wrong, ours is the authentic and yours is something else? Well, that's a non-conversation. That gets us nowhere. We walk away thinking, well, we're right and they're wrong. But that offers nothing to the world in need of tremendous help. At this particular time of year, there's an opportunity, I think.
Go ahead. Please go ahead. So that really speaks to what we continuously talk about, the paramount need to create that inner spaciousness within us, that inner work we continuously have to do particularly when we are in positions of power, to really remember that.
Particularly us, those three of us, you know, because we wield tremendous power. We're, in fact, such power that most people don't understand the nature, the depth, the magnitude of the power we actually... I'm not on, am I not?
People actually fall away as we walk by. Yeah.
No, but it's really true.
Isn't it? Particularly in times when we think we don't need it. Mm-hmm. That's when we really need that, to continue this work at all times, to be aware. You know, it's interesting, in Islam, and I've mentioned this before, the metaphor to really give birth to one's true self by becoming unpuffed. The symbol of the Quran is that you suffer birth pangs like Mary did. And then Mary went to the palm tree, and of course the palm tree bent down to offer its fruits, and a stream appeared from nowhere. And then Mary gave birth to Jesus, which in Islam means you give birth to the Jesus of the Spirit within you. That's when you become unpuffed and get connected to the real, authentic self. You give birth to the Jesus from within you.
It's really interesting because within the... in the instructions for celebrating the Passover that are in the Torah itself, this is a literature coming thousands of years ago, it says you should tell your son on that day, your children on that day, we do this because of what God did for me when I came out of Egypt. And the Haggadah, which is the telling, the story that's read during the Seder, the order of the dinner tonight and tomorrow night, emphasizes over and over again that an individual, each of us, is to experience it as if we were there. And it's not so much we were there, but we're here. The journey is happening now. This is our story. This is our process. And to the extent we put it out there and think that it's someone else, then I think massive confusions exist. Mm-hmm. And I think that happens in all our traditions. Mm-hmm. Because to the extent that one enters into the Easter week story and understands one's participation in that process, right, it brings us nearer to all people.
Right.
But to the extent we experience it as an external, that's happening over there, then that's only happening for those of us who are engaged in this particular story, who believe in this particular story, and everyone else is lost.
So then in the celebration, there is a lot of attention to those rituals of food because they have such deep symbolism.
Yeah. And specificity. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like one of the symbols doesn't even have a prayer. It's called the korech, which is a sandwich that was the first century, where a rabbi named Hillel put charoset, which is this mixture of nuts and apples and wine, or dates, and depending on where your Jewish family is from, it symbolizes the mortar, which the Hebrew slaves had to deal with in making the cities. You'd put that and bitter herb between two pieces of matzah and eat it. And you think, we've been doing that mm-hmm. for 2,007 years. Just amazing. Connecting. Like, what a way to connect. And ultimately, I think this is what all of our traditions are asking us to do. Connect more deeply, not only to our past, but to our present, and in the present to understand our deep connection to all life, to each other, mm-hmm. and to a process of which all of us are a part.
Quick question to Brother Don. So do Christians and Jews celebrate this together at times?
No. I mean, this is unusual from my point of view. I mean, Ted.
No, it's... your experience is the answer. So this is why we're doing what we're doing, not to water down our own traditions, but to experience the depth that we have within ourselves that we can share with each other and with which we can grow. So from the three of us to all of you, special blessings for this special time.
Amen.
Shalom, salam, and peace.